Rise of the Entrepreneur, episode number 32.
We were not born to be slaves to the 9-to-5. A new age has begun, an age of opportunity. Seize the day and make your dreams become reality. Now is the time to take control over our lives. This is Rise of the Entrepreneur. And now, your fearless leader in the war against mediocrity, Zach Johnson.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Rise of the Entrepreneur. Affiliate marketing is the backbone for many successful businesses on the internet today. It's how I first started making money online back in the mid-90s and still a driving force for my business today. Amazon.com is known for being one of the first companies to use affiliate marketing in their business model, and it's definitely been a huge contributor to getting them to where they are today. The great thing about affiliate marketing is that you can make good money with it simply by being a source of information and traffic, while also making sure that you never have to deal directly with the customer or process any orders. Instead, you just need to redirect your site visitors or traffic to another site. And because you made that initial referral, you would earn a commission from any sales or leads that are a result of your traffic link. As simple as it sounds, many people simply aren't using affiliate marketing as much as they could be. And this is something that Oliver Roop also noticed, and he knew there was a world of potential for his new business idea, if only he can just get it up and running. Oliver is now the CEO and founder of Viglink, a platform that connects site owners and advertisers together while also monetizing web-based content with an affiliate marketing twist. It's time to get linked up in this latest episode of Rise of the Entrepreneur with special guest Oliver Roop. Hello, Oliver, and welcome to the show. It's great to have you here today. How's everything going with you?
Very good. Thanks for having me, Zach.
Definitely. Thanks for being here. And everyone wants to make more money on the internet, but not everyone is an online marketing expert or even knows how to get started. And as the founder and CEO of Viglink, you wanted to create a service that made the process of setting up affiliate links and making money on the internet a lot easier. So why don't you tell everyone about yourself, how you got started, and how it's led you to where you are today?
Sure. Thanks very much. So I was a computer science undergrad at MIT, and my early career, you know, I started out in engineering and I moved into product management, really had nothing to do with online marketing or certainly not affiliate stuff. Spent my early career in media, worked for a company called Echo Networks, which was like an early Pandora type company. Worked at Microsoft for 4 years. I left Microsoft to go to business school, and I was looking for a business to start, and I was looking around for lots of different things, you know, interesting ideas, had a big spreadsheet of them. And I got introduced to affiliate marketing, and it seemed really interesting. But when I logged on, you know, I made an account on Commission Junction, logged in, it just seemed really complicated and hard to understand, you know. And I thought, hey, if I have two computer science degrees and I can't figure this stuff out, you know, I'm pretty sure that most publishers can't either. And so I wrote a crawler to go look around the web and count links to Amazon and just see how many of them, you know, had affiliate codes attached. And the answer was less than half. You know, people were linking to Amazon, sending them traffic, but not adding, you know, 10 bytes to their URL that would have gotten them paid. And so I thought, okay, there's very clearly a business opportunity here. And I started, you know, meeting with investors and pitching them. It was really just me and a PowerPoint deck, which I wouldn't recommend. It's not a great way to get funded. But it took me 96 pitches, but pitch number 96 was to a guy called Josh Koppelman at First Round Capital, you know, who came back and said, okay, we're gonna give you some money. We'd like to see what you can do. And that's really where it started.
Amazon.com is where I got started online as well. So that's really fascinating how you were able to pull out the affiliate links and see the numbers behind it. So you had this great idea for your company and business. Did you actually start putting everything together before going out there and looking for funding? Did you have an established business in place, or was it still just an idea that you had?
So I built a prototype myself. I did have some coding skills, still do. And so I did build some software that could, you know, JavaScript library a publisher could put in their page that would modify. Initially, it was just Amazon links. I proved to myself and to the people I was pitching that this could work. I had no employees or customers or launched products. Obviously, there's a long way to go from that tiny little piece of code to a launched product. And I went out for funding early, which, again, I don't know that I'd necessarily recommend. You know, we got candidly pretty bad terms, all things being told on our first round. But, you know, and on the other hand, some guys I didn't know very well gave me almost $1 million to go build something cool. So, can't argue with that. I got no regrets at all. This business needs a lot of scale to become a real business. And so I think, bootstrapping would have taken many years. And I think, I feel good the way things have gone.
Yeah, definitely. And this was all still taking place while you were at Harvard at the time?
The spring of my second year, I started writing code and I incorporated in March and I raised money, signed the term sheet about a week before graduation and had the money in the bank a couple weeks after. And it was a pretty exciting time. Definitely didn't go to too much school that last semester. You know, it was quite something exciting to get involved. I was in Boston, obviously, and then I told all the investors that I was planning to move to San Francisco as I started the company. And so I did that. I moved out here, and the timing lined up just, perfectly or imperfectly, such that I literally pulled into San Francisco and needed to have a corporate bank account open that day. And I walked into Silicon Valley Bank. You know, they sort of looked at me funny and said, yeah, we don't actually do that in this kind of office. And I was about to leave. And they said, oh, wait, hang on. You know, is your company venture backed? And I said, yes, it is. And they said, okay, sit down. You know, their process that usually takes 4 days, they had done in about 3 hours because the money was landing the next day.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing because you got to be right in the heart of Silicon Valley because that's where all the money and the VCs and everything is. So what was the process like actually getting turned down all those times? And what would you have done if you didn't eventually get the funding?
Yeah, so I was in school, and so the process of meeting these people and pitching them, it didn't really feel that bad being turned down, right? First of all, I knew this was a long shot, and somewhere in the back of my head is like, yeah, I understand all these people saying no. Like, I'd probably say no, too. It's kind of crazy. You know, a lot of my classmates were sort of looking for jobs and venture and stuff, and so they were emailing the same people that I was meeting with, hoping to get a coffee meeting or, maybe I can take you to lunch or something. And investors hate those kinds of meetings where there's nothing being pitched and it's just, I'd like to learn more about your industry and ask you for a job. So I sort of viewed it as, okay, look, worst case, you're just meeting all these really smart, connected people. And, hopefully they come away from the meeting thinking you're a pretty smart guy too. And that's not the worst thing in the world. So it didn't really feel that bad at first. I would say as the process wore on, it started to get really tiring. And I definitely did come to a point where, I thought, man, if someone doesn't say yes soon, I got to make a new plan. And in fact, one of my classmates who started a business herself, she had been, bugging me to be her CTO, essentially. And she said, I know you're trying to raise money, but why don't you just come work for me in the meantime? I said, okay, I'll tell you what, if I haven't raised money by graduation, I'll do it. And then I signed a term sheet about a week before graduation. If I hadn't landed it right then, I probably would have gone and worked for her. And I think the story would be very different.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like it all worked out great for you. And so it's been about 5 years since all that took place. And now you have a little over $20 million in funding. And your latest round was for about $18 million. How does all this money help you grow and scale the company to new levels?
Yeah, so it's actually about $25 million that we've raised to date. Look, money lets you hire people in advance of profitability, right? I mean, I think that's really the key thing. You can bring great people to the team. Certainly what we do is what I would describe as, high volume, low margin. So you really need a lot of traffic to be able to, not only make sort of real dollars, as a result of what we do, but also the real thesis behind the company is that with scale, you can make better decisions. So we want to be able to spot a link to a commodity product and say, this isn't the only merchant who sells this product. There's actually 10 merchants out there who sell this product. Let's figure out who would pay the most for, the click, and let's change the link to point to the most lucrative merchant. And by doing that, you're effectively creating an auction, right? You're saying, I have a click coming for a camera. Which of you wants to pay the most for it? And that's really what's most fair for the publisher. But to do that, you need real volume, right? You can't get merchants to come bid in your system if, you only have a little bit of traffic. And in fact, we don't even mostly have merchants come bid. We actually compute their bid based on the history we've seen through our network. And that, has a little bit less resolution in terms of knowing exactly how much they're willing to pay, but has the great property that, everybody participates because they don't need to actively participate. We just sort of enroll them on our behalf. So that takes a lot of volume. And, you know, to get a lot of volume, you got to really go out there and pound the bushes and convince a lot of publishers to sign up. And so that's what we did. And there's a lot of software, you know, you need dashboards and reports and scale and all that stuff. And that, you know, that takes a lot of work. So I think a lot of entrepreneurs, I think particularly in the affiliate business, are a little bit skeptical around venture capital. And there's definitely, you know, upsides and downsides for certain. But, you know, my experience with it has been pretty positive. I don't think I'd be where I am now without it.
Of course. So now let's talk about the business of Viglink. And for example, let's say someone has a website that they're just talking about, that they're passionate about, and they have a ton of traffic and they start to think, I want to make money with this, but I don't know how. So let's take it from two angles and what they could do to monetize their site through the use of affiliate marketing and get complicated with all that versus actually using you guys and making it a lot easier.
So if the conversations are about things for which commercial activity tends to exist, so, you know, products, books, fashion, entertainment, sporting goods, travel, basically people are making purchasing decisions after reading your content and as influenced by your content. And so the opportunity exists to connect your audience to the things that they're sort of increasingly looking to buy as a result of reading your content, and then you know, taking a cut. So, you know, we talked about Amazon earlier. You know, if you have a review site, you're really into, you know, flat panel televisions, and you know do the tests and the ins and outs of which ones are the best ones. When you mention them, you can link to those televisions on Amazon. And then, you know, you can go enroll yourself in the Amazon affiliate program and say, you know, I'm going to change this link to have the affiliate code attached. When people click through from my site to Amazon and buy things, you know, Amazon's going to pay me a commission. So, you know, a couple of things. One is you have to know that exists. You have to do the work to sign up for the Amazon affiliate program. You get probably, at least initially, you'll get their lowest rate because, you know, your volume isn't that high. You know, let's say Best Buy is willing to pay you slightly more per click. You may or may not know that, right? You make some decision at one time. You say, okay, Amazon's where I'm going to link. And then no matter how the world changes, the link always points to Amazon. And in the case of Amazon, it's relatively easy to make that affiliate link. But certainly in the case of, you know, some of the other affiliate networks, Commission Junction, Linkshare, eBay, it's quite a pain in the butt, right? You've got to log into their weird system and copy paste the right URL, and it doesn't look like a link to the merchant. And so, you know, in our experience, people either do that incompletely or tend not to do it. And it certainly takes, you know, if you have a finite amount of time to spend on your business, for every hour you're spending creating spreadsheets of affiliate links and copy and pasting them in and out of affiliate networks, so that's an hour you're not spending, you know, writing the content. You know, in contrast, you can sign up for Viglink. You put our JavaScript library in the bottom of your page, kind of the way you install Google Analytics. And then we just handle all that for you. So if you have a link already pointing to a merchant, we make sure it's a paying link, an affiliate link. We use our scale to negotiate the best possible rate on your behalf. We do take a cut, which is 25% typically, but in many cases that, you know, the better rate we get actually sort of cancels out our commission. And then we do all sorts of clever things to drive up the rate you can command. So one is if you permit us, if you turn on optimization, we can modify the link to point to a different merchant selling the same product. And that lets us essentially force the merchants to compete against each other. We also can do geographic tricks. So a reader in Europe, for example, is very unlikely to buy anything at Best Buy. So, you know, linking a European reader to Best Buy is probably a waste of time. They should really be linked to a European merchant instead of an American one. That's very hard to do manually, but our software does it completely transparently. We also do link insertion if you turn it on. So we can identify phrases where you've mentioned products and underline them for you and link them out to the right place. And this is very unintrusive. You know, you may be familiar with Vibrant Media or Contera, where they do this sort of very intrusive double underline pop-up stuff. And you know, that's not what we sell, right? We have ordinary hyperlinks that point to, you know, relevant products. You know, our aspiration is that it should feel like a human being has done the linking. You know, we'll create all that on your behalf. And, you know, we take care of the making of the money for you. And you can really focus on what only human beings can do, which is write great content, engage your audience, and leave the sort of spreadsheets and administration to us.
Right, that sounds great. And when you look at the two spectrums, you have all the manual work or just using you guys. It seems like a no-brainer for most of the sites out there. So when you have the content written on your site, you mentioned review sites, and then there's other sites that could be entertainment-based. What have you seen from your end to be sites that make the most money based on the industry that they're in?
So forums do really well for us. I think automotive, consumer electronics, entertainment, fashion, lifestyle, meaning sort of like home and garden. And we actually have an interesting subgenre in guns and sort of other outdoor enthusiast, you know, tactical gear type sites. Really any conversation that is sort of product or commercially oriented. And I think that's wider than you might imagine, right? So if there's books about it, if there's movies about it, if there's software about it, if there's products that you're talking about, it tends to enable purchasing decisions. And the, you know, forums is one example, product review sites, blogs, you know, sort of Pinterest clone type sites. All of those are really engaging to users and to audiences and ultimately drive purchase decisions. And I think increasingly advertisers have come to understand, I spend as much as I can productively on Google to get as much traffic from them as I can. And those prices aren't getting any cheaper. But getting people to link to me out of authentic content that people are going off and reading on purpose, that's sort of the new frontier for advertisers. And you know, we can deliver that audience to them at scale, right? Which I think is an attractive proposition. If they say, look, I'm willing to pay a little more, we can actually modify links internet-wide to point from their competitor to them instead. And, you know, that's really an attractive proposition to advertisers. And, you know, it's been hard otherwise. How does an advertiser scale how much traffic they can draw out of the affiliate marketplace? But all those things are sort of long lead time and soft. I think if you want to be able to do what you can do in Google, which is sort of double your spend and double your traffic, solutions like ours is really your best answer.
Of course, and it all comes back to the ROI in the end and seeing real results. And that's something that Viglink actually excels in through their back-end technology. Can you tell us about some of the things that a publisher and an advertiser would see on the back-end stats when they're using your system?
Absolutely. So we have a great dashboard and, you know, we can tell publishers, okay, here are the merchants who are getting the most clicks, the pages that are generating the most clicks, which specific products are being sold. We break it all out on an EPC basis. All that stuff that old school affiliates used to do by hand with spreadsheets in an error prone way, it's just automatically working and built out for us. So we really, you know, we feel great that it just brings a lot more data to the table. We've definitely had sites say, you know, I thought I was an AV site, but looking at the products that sell, you know, after people visit my site, I noticed that there's a lot more enthusiasm about, you know, consumer electronics than I had realized. You know, that is one of those interesting things where being able to look at the downstream data of what people are purchasing after they leave your site can inform your content. You know, that's another thing that advertisers are very interested in. They're interested in generating, you know, traffic to their offers. And that happens both by, you know, offering more sort of lucrative payouts for their offers, but also by just genuine, you know, consumer enthusiasm around their offers. And so I think if publishers start to notice, hey, you know, I'm selling a lot of consumer electronics, I should probably start talking more about, you know, hot consumer electronics. That's really a win for everyone, right? The audience is obviously interested in that. The advertiser gets more traffic. The publisher makes more money. Everybody's happier.
Yeah, exactly. And this is just one step further in making it easier for the site owners and affiliates to focus on creating content that matters and not doing all the back end work.
That's right. And I think it's not just about labor saving, although I think that's a big part of it. It's about doing work that's not really possible to do by hand, right? So I think, you know, a good affiliate can run a spreadsheet and sort of understand which links are working well for them. But what they can't do is rerun that spreadsheet every time a different user loads the page and figure out what is the most lucrative link you could put in place for that particular user. That's not really possible to do by hand. If you look at the display industry and how that's arced, you know, when display first came to the web, people used to hard code in their creative, right? So you'd have, you know, Heineken say, I'm going to go buy ESPN for the month. And ESPN would sort of wire in the Heineken creative into their site for a month. And then it didn't take long for people to say, hey, let's make these ad servers where, you know, we can stick a new piece of creative in on a per page basis or per render basis. And then ultimately you got to DSPs and SSPs where you can sort of run an auction per page to decide what to put in there. And, you know, links are really on that same trajectory. For decades, they've been hard coded. You know, when you write the document, you decide which links they're going to be and you just put them in there and they're there forever. Viglink really introduced the notion that You know, links can be dynamic at render time. Every time the page loads, we make a new decision around links. And we're sort of moving into the, you know, the SSP notion where it's not just dynamic, but the decision of which link to insert is driven by an auction that runs in real time. You know, and that's a really exciting transition.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And I'm sure both sides appreciate it. Advertisers especially, because they just want to know where that money is being spent and how they're seeing long-term ROI instead of just branding.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for the most part, we get paid on a CPA basis. So, you know, nobody makes any money if the consumer doesn't ultimately buy. And I think that, you know, really keeps us honest in terms of that link's got to be relevant. You know, if we insert an irrelevant link and you know, generates click but no sale or no click, you know, nobody wins. Right. That, you know, our advertisers mostly measure us on a cost of sale basis. And, you know, we'll go up against any channel and we're higher ROI than, you know, any other channel.
As an internet marketing company, it's almost an obligation for you to get out there and put your name in front of people and have an exhibit booth so you can explain your company and what you do. So how have you seen benefits by doing this and going to different conferences?
Sure. So we're regulars at Affiliate Summit East and West. We go to the affiliate network conferences like CJU and the LinkShare Symposium and ShareASale Think Tank. This really is a relationship business. You know, I think that's probably what has been a challenge for small publishers, right? A small publisher doesn't have the budget or the time or energy to be able to go to, you know, to these events and meet, you know, the rep for a particular advertiser and tell them, you know, why they should pay more for their traffic. But we do, right? Because we have scale, you know, we can collectively represent our publishers and say, look, like these publishers are too small to each come talk to you one-on-one, but in aggregate, look at how awesome, you know, they are, how much volume they drive, how well their traffic converts. You know, we have a dedicated team that does nothing but talk to advertisers and basically say, look at these great sites, you know, look at how well their traffic converts. You guys should give us the best possible rate. You know, and I think that would be a challenge for small publishers. So we get, you know, what we largely get out of the conferences is meeting with advertisers, you know, to some extent meeting with publishers as well, although I'd say, you know, we often meet them elsewhere or through like a sales effort. But yeah, meeting with advertisers, signing up new advertisers, explaining what we're up to, you know, convincing publishers or, you know, other people in the industry, you know, that what we're up to is the future. And I really think, you know, it is going that way. I think you look at the affiliate networks, they all understand that delivering their product through an interface where you have to copy and paste URLs into your content, that's just not going to be the way it is 5 years from now, right? Everybody's going to be delivering their product through JavaScript. The affiliate networks have a very advertiser-centric view. So a CJA might think to themselves, like, how can I get more clicks for Kmart? And, you know, that's great for Kmart, but if you're a publisher, what you want is someone on your behalf saying, I have a click coming for a camera, who's going to pay the most for it? Right. And so it's like the difference when you're selling a house between the buyer's agent and the sell side agent. They have different agendas and different customers. So our customer is the publisher. You know, we really work to get the best deal we possibly can on their behalf. We do that advocacy at these events.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no better way to get it done by having that face-to-face communication.
You know, these guys have people besieging them. There's a lot of shady characters out there. And I think the only way you can break through the noise is to show up in person. You know, meet them at the event, often have drinks with them after. You know, that's just still how business is done.
Definitely. And when we come back, Oliver Roop is going to be taking the hot seat when he is in the pit of fire.
Are you stuck in the endless battle against the 9-to-5 and living paycheck to paycheck?
Or maybe you already have a business or brand of your own, but struggling to get it to that next level.
Blogging.org is a private community of entrepreneurs, business experts, and everyday people who are discovering new and exciting ways to make money online, earn a side income, and improve their lives.
Zach Johnson, who started his first business when he was just a teenager and has been featured on ABC News and Fox News, created Blogging.org to be an all-in-one solution for every business, brand, and entrepreneur.
As a member, each month you will have access to online video tutorials, training sessions, private discussion forum, insider tips on how to use social media, blogging, and internet marketing to expand your reach and increase profits.
What are you waiting for?
Join now at blogging.org. Blogging.org.
All right, Oliver, here we are in the pit of fire, and we got three hot questions for you. Here comes the first one. Well, you're well known for VigLink right now. You have a long resume of accomplishments. What was a previous job experience that you learned the most from?
So, you know, I spent 4 years at Microsoft. I really learned a lot there. I mean, I'd say critically how to hire teams, how to keep them engaged, how to sort of set priorities in an organization that's bigger than you can just, you know, when your company is five people, everybody knows what everybody's doing and you can just, you know, reach around the room and say, you know, what are you doing? Are you working on the right things? But when your team gets up to 30, 50 people, you know, it's a very different game to be able to keep everyone marching in the same direction when it's too big to just know exactly what everyone's working on all the time. And so I'd say my time at Microsoft was really helpful to learn that, you know, learn a lot about how to, you know, satisfy constituents, you know, there would be sort of higher ups. But, you know, today I have a board and really to learn how to present over time and keep moving and sort of, you know, deliver value for customers. I also learned a fair amount what not to do at Microsoft, candidly. I think certainly, you know, in the early 2000s, their web efforts were very challenged. And I think the critical nature of velocity just became so apparent to me, you know, that if your ship cycle for product is, I mean, it sounds crazy to say it now, but it would be like 6 months, you know, at Microsoft, there's just no possible way you can compete. So, you know, the Googles and Amazons of the world shipping like 1,000 code changes a week, you know, and it was just, you know, I really drove home the necessity of velocity to have a competitive business.
Yeah, I bet that was quite the learning experience. And what is the best piece of advice you ever got, along with the worst piece of advice?
Right. I think the best piece of advice would have to be focus on the longer game. Like, I think it's very easy to get into hyper-tactical mode where you just think, you know, here's my list of stuff I have to do this week, and, you know, I'm just going to try and burn through it and be very reactive. You know, here's the, you know, what a customer needs this week. Here's what this person needs, you know, and just sort of be responsive. And of course, being responsive is good, but I think great companies are not built by just like reacting to things that are happening to you. They're built by, you know, setting effectively a North Star, describing it to your team and trying to get the overall highest velocity over months, you know, rather than today. I think that really is the right approach and sort of a real learning experience as a startup. You know, I mean, there are days for all-nighters. There are times when, you know, something just has to get done this week and you just do whatever you can to make it happen. It's a marathon, not a sprint, right? That notion of keeping up solid progress in the right direction over weeks and months, that is something that takes a while to appreciate, but really, I think, is the whole game at the end of the day. The worst advice, Silicon Valley is sort of remarkable for how helpful people are with no kickback to them, right? With no sort of consideration to them. I think what's really wonderful about Silicon Valley is, you know, people will often just help you, you know, if you're credible, if you seem like you've got something going on, they can often just introduce you to the right people, take your meeting, you know, give you advice. You know, this is a bit of a roundabout answer, but I think if you meet advisors or, you know, sort of consultants and very early in the conversation, they say, you know, the first thing you got to do is hand me a piece of equity in your company. I would probably be very, very skeptical of those people. I think the people who really have the juice in Silicon Valley do not behave that way. And I think if someone comes to you with their hands out, they're probably not as connected in the Valley as they'd have you believe. And they, you know, are probably not going to be as helpful as you'd like.
That's some good advice. And for the last question, what's the most exciting thing that's happened to you as a result of your personal and business success?
I'm sure you're looking for some answer of like, you know, flying in a jet with, you know, some celebrity or something. But I really think I wanted to be able to create, right? I wanted to be able to say, hey, this is a thing that I can imagine existing in the world and I want it to exist and it's going to exist. And I think having created an environment where that's true is continuously exciting to me. So, you know, we have a team now of 20-ish engineers who do nothing but try to make our product better. You know, this idea I described 5 years ago now exists in the world and is readily accepted as sort of insightful for the time and generically speaking, the way that things are going. That is the most exciting thing to me, to have a force of smart people, you know, working in pursuit of the vision I laid out a few years ago when it really was just me and a PowerPoint deck. you know, that is the most exciting thing. And I think, sure, there's lots of parties and you get invited and meet great people and, you know, sometimes go to exotic locales, but none of that really matters next to the, you know, the enabling of the creation. And I think that's a good, you know, metric to set with yourself, that I think if you find yourself spending too much time kind of networking and meeting people and not enough time creating, you know, you're probably on the wrong track. At the end of it, this business is about putting in the work and making something that didn't exist before. And the people who succeed are the people who do that.
Yeah, that's a great answer and definitely something to be proud of. So before we go, Oliver, please let everyone know what you're currently working on and how we can find you online.
Great. So I'm Oliver Roop. I'm the founder CEO of Viglink. That's viglink.com. My email address is oliver@viglink.com. We help publishers monetize by creating ad units focused on links and content. I'd love to talk to some of your audience about what we're up to, you know, be able to help them make more money, enable advertisers to get more converting traffic, and, you know, generally make the web a better experience. Viglink, the vision of Viglink is to make the web better by making every link intelligent and valuable. And I think we're well on our way, and I'd love your audience's help in getting there.
All right, Oliver, thanks so much for being here, and I'm sure our audience will be in touch with you soon.
Great. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks again to Oliver for sharing his story of how he built a multi-million dollar company from the ground up, while also having to get others to believe in his dream at the same time. Whether you are a multi-million dollar company with an office location and staff, or just a part-time blogger sitting in your home right now, affiliate marketing is one of the most powerful opportunities that you will ever come across. It's changed my life, and it can definitely do the same for you. Thanks again for listening into another episode of The Rise of the Entrepreneur, and I would love to hear from you and what's going on in both your life and business right now. Also, be sure to check out my blog at zachjohnson.com for show notes, or even join my private community at blogging.org. At the end of the day, it's all about making our lives better and engaging with the people around us, and that's what I'm trying to do for you. Until next time, this is Zach Johnson, and remember, it's not about making $1 million or becoming super successful overnight, but instead, it's about the long journey. And in keeping with this same theme, I leave you with a quote from my good friend, Jamie Tardy. Success is a series of small wins.